I'm Damien the DM from Adventures in Aurelia, a collaborative storytelling experience told through a game of Dungeons & Dragons, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other epically geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
Welcome to episode 291 of Better Podcasting. On this show, we continue our podcast media host discussion, talking to Chris Osborne about his experiences with Pinecast.
But first, in this week's Better Podnerings, topics include me ragging on Mackie, affinity maybe not for infinity, and it's time to merge into YouTube music.
And finally, in this week's Better Podback, we have a Buzzcast question.
Lauren,
start the show now, because our guest Waffles is going to do some Blink 182 later.
This is Better Podcasting. We are hobby podcasters through and through, just like you. That's why we are different. We minimize the money talk so that you can focus on building a better podcast.
This is episode 291 of Better Podcasting. I am Steven, and I am pleased to say SP is still here this week.
You tried to get rid of me again, and I keep on coming back like a bad penny.
Yes, a bad penny, which don't exist in Canada. But it's not just us, because we are here with another guest. Yes, we are here with another guest. And if you're saying to yourself, wow, this is really hard for me to keep track of who your guests are, well, you're in luck, because this guest has the same first name as our previous guest. It is Chris from Play Comics here this week. Hello, Chris.
Hey, how are you guys? I'm glad to finally get to be on the show. I've only been asking SP for 12 years.
I thought it was closer to 13.
I can't count. You know that.
We are here with Chris from Play Comics, and we're going to be talking a little bit about Pinecast a bit later. We reviewed that a few weeks back, but Chris, which is also known as Waffles, by the way, he has extensive experience with Pinecast, so we're looking forward to revisiting that a little bit later. But Chris, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself for those who didn't actually hear the Hobby Podcaster profile last week?
Well, first off, you should go back and watch that, because the person who put the video together was a genius.
I agree. He is a genius, and he made this show far better. In fact, I think that I will leave so that he can permanently produce this show.
That's not me, by the way.
I barely have time to make my own show, which is called Play Comics. Play Comics is a show where I'm looking at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. So we're not really looking at if the game is good or not. We're looking at if it is a good gateway to teach someone about your favorite comic property. I know I've got an episode lined up where SP is going to come on. We just need to actually get timing to work out. Still trying to work on Steven.
I'm just not as well educated as you two. So that's what it comes down to. We know that out of the three of us here today, I am the most inferior. And that's not just because I'm Canadian.
Well, who had a comic podcast before either of us did? That was you. Who's been playing video games longer? Well, wait, that would be me.
Yeah, you're the old one. All right, I got disappointing news to share on here. For those of you who are new to the show, for the last, 2 years, SP's been telling you the saga of the Rodecaster Pro 2. And he's had some ups and some downs, and some even more downs with the Rodecaster Pro 2. And so we've talked a little bit about some alternatives that might be out there. And one of the ones that's come to mind is the Mackie DLZ Creator, as well as, if you want the smaller version, the Mackie DLZ Creator XS. Well, guess what? I decided to pull the trigger last week, and I decided to pick it up, the Mackie DLZ Creator XS. So I bought it, unboxed it, was all pretty and shiny, great size, said this is going to be a nice smaller footprint for my desk, but with the advantage of a larger screen. And then as I started to use it, the interface, super great, super as I would hope to have it. And then I turned it on, actually, and heard a high-pitched whine. So right away, I heard a high-pitched whine out of there. And now I will recognize this is one of those electronics whines that was noticeable to me so much so that I knew I couldn't keep that unit. It just wouldn't be something that I'd be okay with. But there became more problems as I went through, because my original intention was to go and try to get it exchanged for another unit so that I could hopefully have one that didn't whine, but it was something I was not willing to put up with. So I thought, okay, first thing I should do with this is I will go and upgrade the firmware. It seems like that's a good idea. So I went to the website, looked at the little support section, and it said that the current firmware was version 1.2 for the Mackie DLZ Creator XS. So I went, well, I wonder what firmware is on here. And I went to the about page and I looked on the about page. And it didn't say 1.2 or anything of the 1.0 nature or anything like that. It actually said a totally different structure. It said 2023 dot something. And then it never actually said 1. anything. And then it gave me a build number as well. So format just totally didn't match what was listed on the website.
Are you sure that wasn't an error in your computer converting from English to Canadian?
It might have been. There might have been some moose translation in there. But I thought, you know what? I'll still give it a go. I'll put it on the card, see what happens. And for those of you not familiar, the Mackie DLZ Creator XS, you can actually record to either an SD card or a USB drive. So I thought, well, let's start with the USB drive. So I threw the file onto the USB drive, tried to load it up. File wasn't recognized because you actually have to run the apply the firmware update manually. Yes, you have to actually manually load it even though there is an Ethernet port on there. Come back to that in a minute. So I loaded up the file, didn't show up. So I thought, okay, let me try an SD card. Pop the SD card in, drop the file over. Still didn't work. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe it's on the most recent firmware update, because clearly there's a mismatch between the number posted on the site and what's actually on the about page. But unfortunately, it was the weekend. But I still decided that I would wrote them a message and said, hey, what's up with this? These numbers don't match. And I thought maybe they would be able to get back to me. So they got back to me and they actually did point me to the solution of why I couldn't get that file to actually load. And I'll come back to that again in a minute. They said, hi, Steven, thanks for writing. I'm also in the dark about those technical firmware numbers, but 1.2 is the latest version. If you don't see it on your disk, ensure that it's formatted as FAT32, then put the file onto it, end quote. So I ended up doing that, reformatting the SD card, and sure enough, that actually did work. So I could actually load it in. And so once it updated, I thought, well, now it will show 1.2. Go to the about page. Nope. Still had the same sort of format as the other one, where it said 2024 dot whatever date and then a build number. So clearly there's some disconnect between what's posted on there, what support knows, and what is actually displayed on the about page. Well, I continued with my journey of investigating, because as I mentioned, there is an Ethernet port, and that is one of the big functions that I wanted from the DLZ Creator XS, is I wanted to be able to use the NDI function, basically the function of capturing the audio over the network. This is something that I really wanted to do to have that second output, and that's something that the DLZ Creator XS would be able to do. You could have by USB and by NDI. So before I could even investigate that, I thought, well, what happens if I hit the IP address from a web browser? So I hooked it up to my network and I decided to browse on over to that IP address. And what did I see on there? A great full interface of the digital controls that were on the Mackie DLZ Creator XS screen. Basically, anything that you controlled on the screen looked exactly like that from a web browser. It's really helpful, especially if you're wanting to do EQ, do other things. You know, you could change settings, you could load other presets, you could go through the whole menu of everything that is customizable on there, including establishing a lockout code. So if you did not know this, you could actually put a lockout code so that if you're using this somewhere, nobody can go and screw around with your settings. You can put in a 4-digit PIN code and then lock the display so only the analog things can be adjusted. Everything else would all be safe and sound on the actual DLZ Creator XS screen. Well, that is also there on the web aspect. So if you were connected to my network, you could hit the IP address of the DLZ Creator Access, do whatever you want to the settings, and then put a lock code on it, locking me out of the console. Could you maybe reset it to get around it? I don't know, maybe. The only reset I saw was behind the lock. So I don't know. But all of this combined with some other things just made me go, no, it's not for me. And because of the wine, it was going back anyways, that specific unit. But that lock thing really bugged me because I did email them and I asked whether or not that could be worked around so that the web interface could be protected. And they said, at this time, I don't believe there's a way to lock out the device over the network. You can vie for the feature by submitting it as a feature request on our Discord.
Wait a minute. Vi, are we talking about Joust for the win? Are we talking about fight to the death? I mean, what kind of vi are we talking about here?
I think it was rock, paper, scissors, but I might be wrong.
Scissors, a paper Spock?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Lizard Spock.
Of course, I wanted to check out the Discord, so I went, what Discord? And I looked on the website and I didn't see anything. And so I emailed them back. I said, can you please provide the Discord info? And they responded, quote, link. Actually, I'm going to quote what I said. I said, quote, can you please provide the Discord info? End quote. Their response was, quote, link an invite link. We don't do those. You can access it from the DLZ creator product pages. End quote. God forbid they actually just give me the link. So I never actually looked it up after that. I was really frustrated because it was kind of pulling teeth. But the open network feature was really a showstopper for me in itself, because although I have my networks all segmented, and in theory, my kids are not on my network and all this other crap, you never know. I don't like that. And who knows if they're ever going to patch that? And what if I wanted to use this somewhere on a more public network that had other people on it? Like, maybe all of a sudden I have enough of my complicated network and I go, I'm just going to have a regular consumer network where everybody is on the same network. Then it would be wide open. And who knows with Rode having acquired Mackie, what's going to come from there. And the support just left me with the wrong taste in my mouth. Combine it with the fact that it is Polywave. You have to manually pull the SD card out to pull the files. So there's no transfer utility. There's no accompanying software. And the stereo mix track that's recorded to the SD card is a little bit weird, where if there's a channel 13, 14 added on the multi-track recording, which is traditionally the mix down of the entire board, basically what's going out through the speakers and everything. Well, on the DLZ Creator XS, it actually basically removes anything that's tagged as a mix minus. So essentially, if you got USB coming into the board and then you do the mix minus because you don't want it going back to the people, then that's actually removed from the mix down track on the SD card. Yes, the individual track is there, so it's not a huge deal. But if for some reason you wanted to just pull that track 13 and 14 mix down, you'd have to do a little manual addition of the individual USB track. So it just wasn't for me. The wine was meaning that specific unit was going back, but all these other downsides, it couldn't make up for the pluses that I did see, which was the interface. The interface is amazing. Really easy to see, even on the DLZ Creator XS. And the way you set the EQ and everything, just in line with what you would expect with like an EQ plugin and everything. And so, yeah, lots of pros, but lots of cons. And so that is back. It's returned back. And I will not be exploring getting another.
So wait a minute, let me get this straight. In the last few weeks, we have ruled out the Tascam Mixcast 4 for further consideration because of issues from last week, right? I have run into extreme issues with the Rodecaster Pro 2. So that's kind of out. The Rodecaster Pro OG, the preamps on it aren't that great. And now you're saying the Mackie DLZ Creator XS has issues. So basically, we're down to a hope that the Duo might work.
At this point, I'm not buying anything else. I'm going to be honest. I'm not buying anything else unless it's something like maybe a Vocaster 1 or a Vocaster 2 just for the audio output so that I can have a clear headphones output when I am mastering. That's the only thing. But I have a couple pieces of gear around that actually might do that in itself. That might be better than the headphone output on the Rodecaster Pro 1. So I'm calling it now. Unless something changes, I'm back to the Rodecaster Pro 1. I've actually hooked the DBX 286 back up because just the weird preamps and the weird settings that are on the Rodecaster Pro 1. And that's where I'm going to live for now, balancing between those two things for now. So, Chris, do you got any questions about any of that as I throw you into this random Mackie rant?
At what point do you just go full analog with it and go back to using reel-to-reel tape?
I have to admit that, you know, not full analog, but I did consider pulling it back out the Zoom L12 or the L8. I considered that at one point here, but the lack of mute doesn't work for me because I'm so used to being able to actually hit a mute button and it affect the recording, and the L12 and the L8 records pre-mute. So I thought about going back further. I definitely did. Not to tape, but maybe that is a consideration.
I think tape would be, no, I don't think you need to do that. I think at the very least, you could probably get a Zoom H6 Essential and do it that way, but you'd still need a mixing board. So I'm so sorry, man. I'm sorry, because this is supposed to be the golden age of podcasting gear and streaming gear, right? And
yeah.
And we have had so much issues. You've ruled out the Rodecaster Pro 2 because of my issues, and you've ruled out everything else because of issues that you've encountered. So it's like, and you can't do a DLZ, for those that are wondering, the DLZ creator, the big board, you can't do that because you don't have enough desk space for it, or you just don't want to encumber like half your desk with it.
Yeah, and I wonder if they have the same security vulnerability, which I'm surprised I Googled. I didn't see anybody mention that. And so I kind of expected when I sent that ticket for them to come back and say, no, it's here. You just do this. Or, oh, that's a bug. That shouldn't be. We'll have that updated in the future. But the fact that they seem to just know about it is bizarre, like especially because most people slap it on a network. And what happens if someone slaps this on a network that's shared with a roommate or something, and that roommate's mad, or you know, their roommate shares the network access or something? Like,
I think they might consider it a feature. Like, you can get to it anywhere on the internet if it's NDI, right?
Okay, so this is beside the NDI point, and not really. There are ways that you can route NDI outside, but this is just hitting the IP address, and it's just a web interface for controlling the unit. And so it's definitely a huge feature to have because it is a very comprehensive web-based controller, but it should be protected from anybody being able to on the network just go in and lock you out of it.
Yeah, well, hopefully the next generation of gear will have something in it for you, so
I'll see.
I mean, I'm riding the Rodecaster Pro 2 out just because it's the only thing I got at this point. I'll give an update next week on the Rodecaster Pro 2 for those following the saga. Nothing has changed since last week.
And if anybody has any other questions about the DLZ Creator Access, please come to our Discord or send us an email or whatever, because I know I rambled through a bunch of stuff there, but that was for the sake of time. I did actually try to capture a couple videos too to hold on to in case it's helpful with discussions in the future, but just let me know and be happy to answer what I saw anyways. Let's move on to the next thing, which is about Affinity. Affinity, for those of you not familiar, is a product that is, well, Affinity Photo is one of the products that the Affinity suite has, and it is like Photoshop. And a lot of consumers are using it because it's not subscription like Photoshop. Well, there has been a change, right, SP?
Yeah, there is. I didn't know about this because I didn't receive an email from it or anything, which is kind of scratching my head over that. I guess I must not have registered my product. They apparently emailed everybody, and I saw it on our Discord server. For those of you that want in on that, that's betterpodcasting.com/Discord. There was a press release that basically said that Canva has purchased Affinity, and you can expect to hear more from us about our plans to unlock the power of Affinity's technology within Canva over time. Watch this space. And it was a link to their press release. There is the Affinity suite. It's like three different packages, like you said, that's very similar to Adobe. And this was considered a way to get around a subscription piece. I've used Canva before for minor podcast stuff. I'm not a big graphics guy. I want somebody else to help me out with it. That's why I have you and Chris actually around, so you guys can do like graphics for me. But if I use something, I use Canva. Canva is a very there. It's capable, but it's kind of dumbed down from like the high level advanced features that you can get with Affinity or Adobe. And for them to take over Affinity, it just has worry written all over it. I have nothing to say that this is going to go bad, but there's all sorts of concern everywhere about Affinity possibly going to a subscription model in the future, about Canva just taking the capabilities for Affinity and moving it into Canva and then discontinuing the Affinity model. There's all those possibilities. And Canva, for its part, and Affinity have been messaging nothing is changing today. It's the word today in there that has everybody worried. So we're going to let this play out. I'm not going to make an assessment. There's just all sorts of worry about it. This is a big thing for people that don't want to pay Adobe oodles of money every month for their subscription. Like one thing I believe is $20 a month, but then you start bundling it, it goes up to $50 a month and more. It gets expensive real quick for hobbyists. And that's why we've been using Affinity, because it's a one purchase and you're done for years. And it's much more economical. So we're going to keep our eyes on this and just see where it goes. But this could affect a hobbyist's ability to do graphics with high advanced features.
Yeah, they did come out actually today on the 27th, and they did make a statement to the effect of they'll always be offering a perpetual license option. And if they offer subscription, it would be alongside. I don't honestly personally believe, like, take any of that at face value. I think that there's a lot of changes that happen, and things that are said now don't always meet the long-term business needs. So I think you can't always bank on that. However, I will say that as much as I do think that this is probably going to go less favorable in the long run to the end user, when Adobe did create some of this generative AI stuff and bring it into things like Photoshop, it really quickly changed my position on Affinity. I have been using the Affinity suite of products for a while. I started with Photo, then I went over to their designer, then the publisher. And so they have a few different ones that I bought before I ended up buying the version 2 license, because it worked for me. And I thought this does most of what I needed in Adobe. Well, when they did the generative AI, I no longer could say that it was an analog, because I think for a general consumer, the generative AI features in Adobe are very powerful, and they are great for people who don't have the expertise in Photoshopping and other photo editing and manipulation and design. And so I think without having that in there, the appeal to the Affinity products only goes so far when people are going, well, okay, I could instead maybe subscribe to Adobe for more per month, but it'll save me a bunch of time because it's got all these generative AI features. And the reality is a lot of these AI-based features are on a subscription basis as of 2024. So how do you work those into a perpetual license? You don't. It probably would cost them way too much to do that if every query was costing them money. So the idea that there could be a subscription alongside that would enable some of these features, I don't think is necessarily terrible on its face value there. Now, what will happen in the long run? Will the actual mainstream build of the Affinity products end up being only under the subscription? Maybe, and that could be bad for consumers, but I think this could potentially open up some doors for some of those extra features.
Now, Chris, what graphic suite do you use?
I use Affinity, and it's hit everything that I need to do. I made this graphic that you see behind me here with it. I've been using it to make the title cards for Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff. I used it in all of the episode art that I make for Play Comics, and it does everything I need it to do. And, you know, I don't care about the generative AI stuff, so that part's fine. But, you know, I'm happy with Affinity. I used Krita before. I don't remember what it was that made me switch away from Krita to Affinity, but at least from the photo side of things, there are still options because Krita is an open source product.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens here, and maybe there'll be something else that a bunch of us flock to. Who knows? Maybe that'll happen.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, we're going to move on to our next news point or discussion point. And this is very timely this week because allegedly Google Podcasts is going to be shutting down next week. And they're replacing it within the Alphabet Corporation with YouTube Music. So there's a bunch of things going on. You can actually get your playlists imported from Google Podcasts over to YouTube Music. You can download them as a file that you can then use to upload to some podcatchers as well, so you don't lose your subscriptions, basically. But that's from the user standpoint. As a podcaster standpoint, we've talked about this before, but I just want to foot stomp it this week because it's renewed information and timely, that sort of thing. And the first thing is, how do you get your podcast on YouTube Music? Now, the first way that came along was to create a YouTube channel. And within that YouTube channel, you create a playlist on your channel and then just label it as a podcast. There's things that you have to go through, boxes that you have to check, information that you need to input. And once you're done, then it is, boom, called a podcast. It is not the traditional RSS feed, so you can't take it and upload it to, say, Apple Podcasts or Spotify from there. It is simply listed as a podcast within YouTube. And for the purists out there that are RSS, that's not a podcast. We've had this discussion before. Don't really want to go into it today. It's a podcast when the audience says it's a podcast. And then we can just move on with that. So once you do that, then you start uploading files. Are they audio files? No, they're actually video files. Now, you can either do what we do on Better Podcasting and Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. and upload a talking head video, or you can put graphics over there, maybe do some VTubing on your show and then upload it as a video that way. Or you can do what a lot of people do, and they use either third-party software or graphics video software and just upload a static image over time and create a video that way, where it's just a static image video. We don't really advocate that. It's a target of last resort, basically, because we just don't think that the interaction is going to be there. But it does get your podcast into YouTube Music. And in YouTube Music, it could be played either as a video or an audio. There's a toggle in there that you can go back and forth if it's coming from YouTube as a video. So that's way number one. The second way you can get your podcast onto YouTube Music is by using a third party, basically your podcast media host provider. Some of them do this, some of them do not, but YouTube has partnered with several of them that you can upload your podcast to a YouTube channel with a playlist that you've set up, same as the one before, but you don't have to manually do anything. You just publish your podcast on your media host and they automatically upload it with a static image to the YouTube channel. Stats back to the media host depends on what kind of partnership or agreement that they have back and forth. Libsyn does pull stats from it. I don't know if they report it separately or not because I haven't used it that way at all. Matter of fact, I upload my videos separately just to be fully transparent. I do not use any automated posting to YouTube. There's a caveat with using this, though. You can't have any baked-in advertisements, which we don't really talk about here, the monetization aspect of podcasting, because we're talking to hobby podcasters that can't or don't monetize. But if you have dynamically inserted ads, for instance, they won't accept them through YouTube. And I don't know what the review process is with YouTube, if they go through each video and they say, oh, aha, we found an ad here, then they will automatically take it down. But the agreement, the terms of service basically says you cannot have baked in advertisements. So if I'm a creator and I'm looking to advertise on my show and then get paid for that, I'm scratching my head over why you would want to upload from your podcast media host service to YouTube, because you can't count the plays for dynamic ad insertion. So just saying, just my little assessment there. And then I also have a question on what happens if you switch media host services. Maybe you go to somebody that doesn't have this partnership, but the RSS feed is still there. So I don't know what happens if you switch, and does your podcast still upload to YouTube or not? Or do you have to set it up again? Maybe. I don't know what happens there. I don't have an answer to that, but it is a question that is a little troubling to me, that you can't just throw in like a 301 redirect and expect it to actually work. And I believe on a previous podcast, I called it a 401 redirect. That's not true. It's a 301 redirect.
I never caught that. Did you really?
Yeah, I did. I said 401 redirect. I'm like, yeah, maybe I was thinking 404 at that point in time. So that's the second way. Now, there is a third way that I've discovered to actually get your podcast into the YouTube library, and that's you individually as a listener. You go to your YouTube music library, and you go to the view, which is podcasts only. You click on the square that says add a podcast. There is a selection in there that you go down to the RSS feed, and then you can input the RSS feed. You can try to search for it if it's already there, and if it's already there by the name, then you can throw it in there. If it's not, you can put your RSS feed in there and it will appear. It's audio only at that point in time because it is an RSS feed and you're not doing it through a YouTube channel. I have no idea if the stacks actually ping back to your podcast media host, your stats provider or whatever. So those are the three ways that I know as a creator, as a podcaster, that you can get your show on YouTube if you so desire to have your show on YouTube Music. And just a separate little note, if you do use a YouTube channel, please validate your channel. And if you don't, you're not going to be able to get shows or videos longer than 15 minutes out there. So you have to go in and validate through the email address back and forth. It's actually pretty simple. It takes less than a day, but you have to do that. Otherwise, when you upload your podcast, I forget if it doesn't play at all or just the first 15 minutes play. I can't remember which one. But either way is bad if you have a podcast longer than 15 minutes. So there you go. If you are playing in YouTube's ecosystem, take advantage of it for better reach, in my opinion. You might be positioned to shift better when Alphabet decides to take podcasts away from YouTube Music or shift their audio again to something else. I don't know. And then as repeat, the plays in YouTube Music really don't matter to advertisers. You can do a host read advertisement. I want to say that you can do that, but you can't have that like dynamic ad insertion, third party advertisement, because YouTube wants, and they've admitted this, they want to sell their own ads. You're in their ad ecosystem at that point. So they don't want to support anybody else's ad marketplace.
I'd like to know what their real reason is behind this, because this is too complicated to have any meaningful impact into the podcast listening consumption, I think. I think that this has all the markings of people trying it and going, oh, I want to subscribe to this podcast I just heard about, searching it and it not being there. It's just too complicated of a process for a lot of people compared to the other things that we've seen out there, like when Spotify came in and it was just like how Apple Podcast was, where, you know, you submitted it and then it just did its thing. So unless something changes, I just think that this is a huge uphill climb for a lot of podcasters to get set up. And I'm curious to see how many actually end up in the directory in the end of things.
To me, it just screams that somebody the other day realized, oh, wait, we're shutting down Google Podcasts. We should probably have something. And they got some unpaid interns to slap something together as a job interview and then stole their work.
I like that theory. I'll roll with that.
From a podcaster standpoint, it's trying to play within their ecosystem, within their search algorithm, and try to get a portion of their marketplace, basically. I mean, we've advocated on this show that put your podcast everywhere for a while. If you're a hobby podcaster, you're struggling to get listens, you know, put it everywhere that you can actually get listens. I know people have had philosophical differences with terms of services, companies like Spotify, for instance. I know that's still a thing across the board, But if you're trying to get listens, if you're trying to grow your podcast and grow your community, I don't think it's necessarily bad to put your show on YouTube. Now, like I said, you can debate with me. I'm fine with that. But that's the impetus, I think, for people wanting to get on there. And then this new generation, which is even younger than you, Chris, they don't care that podcasts started out in audio and you had to download them and play them on an iPod or something like that. They're like, hey, it's just on YouTube. That's the podcast I listen to. It's on YouTube. I'll watch it. So, okay.
I'm old enough to be some of those people's dads, too. It's kind of scary.
But they do care about finding it. And so I question, what is the ecosystem that you referred to? It's not Android. It's not necessarily Google either, because it's, you know, people who are on Google devices aren't just going to default to YouTube Music if they're looking for podcasts and they're not there. That's been the problem. That's why Google Podcasts didn't work, because although it was on the phone, it didn't offer what they needed to. So what is that ecosystem? I think that this has more markings of failure than either of the previous two iterations.
We're not going to really know the answer here for at least a few months, because Google Podcasts is shutting down in April. It'll take a couple of months for people to shift around and for the stats to really come back. I mean, it'll take a couple of months just to get the stats for April, but I think it's going to take a couple more months for people to find where they're going to go and actually listen to stuff. So we're not going to know until the fall on whether this is going to be a success or not. This is great speculation and great debate between now and then, but it's going to be the marketplace that actually decides whether this is a good idea or not. And I don't know. I don't know what that's going to be. This is a gamble.
Well, come back in the fall when we'll talk about them closing down YouTube Music Podcast.
You're probably not far from wrong, but okay.
Let's move on to the media host segment, where Waffles is going to tell us about where he buys his waffles. I assume that's what's going on here today. You're going to talk to us all about waffles and where you purchase them, because it is your nickname after all, right?
Not only waffles, you should go get them at Waffle House, because when you go there, you get a meal and a show, since you get to sit there and watch all the cooks interact and regular customers and stuff. And it's just a wonderful time.
This podcast not sponsored by Waffle House.
I've never been to a Waffle House.
You should try it. I actually don't know if they exist in Canada.
I don't think they do. Or if they do, they're not in my area. No. Chris is not here to talk about waffles or consuming waffles, although you could come to our Discord and ask him about that. He's here to talk about Pinecast.
Yeah, so we have a couple prepared questions for you, Chris. And the first one is, what is your social security number, your credit card number, and your PIN number?
My PIN number is 1234.
Okay. And then we'll move on from that and ask you, what's your history with media hosting and how did you eventually get to Pinecast in your podcasting journey?
When I started, SP, close your ears, because I used Blueberry.
Okay.
Gonna let SP finish throwing up. And after that, I moved over to a network that self-hosted everything for themselves. So it was all on their whatever service they were using. And then when that network decided to shut down, I had to go find something for myself. And I was looking around and Pinecast was still pretty new then. Like, they still hadn't even split up the plans. You had your starter plan and your whatever they called it, pro plan. That was all of the add-ons that they have now. It was you get all of them or you get none of them. And no talks of switching away from that $5 a month pay rate yet for the starter plan.
So are you grandfathered on, I'm assuming you went with the $5 a month plan. Are you still on that? And are you grandfathered on the $5 a month plan?
I am still on the $5 a month plan, mostly because of the stats. The stats are the only thing that I've looked at. I had it before, and there are just some things that I want to be able to check. And I'm willing to maintain the spreadsheet to check all those and have all my weird things that I don't expect any media host to give me the answers for. But I cannot get Pinecast to give me those raw numbers all in one space. I understand why they wouldn't want to put that on the graph. Like, if it was a million points on the graph of, hey, somebody listened to this episode one time this week, you know, that makes sense. Lump all those together. But let me download that comma separated values file, separating everything out. I don't want to have other episodes there. So eventually I stopped getting the stats. You know, I might get one of the other add-ons, but for now, I'm just riding that $5 a month plan.
Okay, well, that brings us to another question here. What are some of the features that you might want them to offer you? Because we'll talk about all the pros, all the things you like in a little bit. But since you said you'd like to have them give you those raw numbers, what other things might you like to see in an ideal world, or maybe even bundled in to the current price that you pay?
I'd like to be able to give somebody else access if they have their own account. You know, I know SP has the account set up for chats with SP. You know, if he has his account, maybe let us go and flip between each other and give access to some shows. That would be pretty cool. Other than that, though, I can't think of much that I really want from them. I kind of run my show real basic, so they provide what I need for the most part.
So in our assessment that we started in Better Podcasting 284, where we laid out our criteria, our current criteria for podcast media host providers, is there anything missing out of there, or anything that just jumps out at you as, yeah, that's a criteria I really want? You said the multiple access or the multiple accounts to their, you're on Pinecast, which has multiple RSS feeds capable. So if you want to start another show, you can. Is there anything else that really jumps out at you, or anything missing from our criteria?
No, I think you guys pretty well covered it. Maybe in some instances overcover it, but you're trying to find a good spot for your baby. So overcovering it is not a bad move there at all.
I want to ask you about that, though. So as somebody who is saying we're overcovering it, what do you not care about out of some of the things that we're talking about? Because we did create a big long list, and our entire intention was to dial back or add in based off feedback. And I'm glad you're bringing this up. So what don't you care about?
Like the social media account, auto posting and stuff. I can take care of that so many other places. I don't care if it happens from my podcast media provider. I personally don't care if they have a website. But I also have a website that does way more than any podcast could do. So, yeah, that's something you guys need to have in there for what you're looking at. But, you know, I just kind of ignore that part.
Okay. Since you do have a website, how is integrating Pinecast into your website? How has that been for you?
Up until probably a few days ago, I basically wasn't. All I was doing was taking that file URL and putting it in the PowerPress plugin. And I'd been toying around with trying to find a way to not use the PowerPress plugin just because I'd like to be a little more consolidated in what I'm doing. And I finally had the bright idea to take that embeddable player that Pinecast gives you and put it in the excerpt of the post instead of just in the body. And what do you know? It actually worked. So I'm going to have some fun times going back and changing all those if it's something that I decide to go back and change. And I asked my wife and a few other people which thing that they would rather click on between the PowerPress super basic, just linear black player, or the nice fancy one that I picked out from Pinecast with the episode art and everything. And pretty much across the board, they said that they would be jumping at the Pinecast one over the super basic black player that PowerPress has.
I'm glad you bring up the embed, because I don't think we actually mentioned that when we talked about Pinecast. And it is quite the contrast to the websites that they offer on Pinecast, because it does look quite nice, which cannot be said about their websites. Yeah,
the player that they have, I want to say four or five different players, but two of them are pretty similar. So you can get something really basic, or you can get something that has your whole episode art, has the transcripts popping up in that player as you're going along and playing. And you know, it's pretty nice. You can find something to fit whatever kind of website you're trying to make it fit into.
All right. So obviously the embed works for you. What other features do you quite like about there? And I'll also throw this to you to piggyback on as well. What do you think that we got wrong? I mean, me, what did I get wrong? Because we know SP is always right about everything.
I like that they have the automatic transcripts that pop up sometimes in the player, depending on which player option you pick. I wish that there was a way for people to see that entire transcript and not just the line or two that it shows on the player, but that's better than nothing. So it's progress. And, you know, I can always go and copy those transcripts somewhere and just host the file on the website. It's fine. But the main thing I think that Steven specifically got wrong is, why are you letting SP give out that direct link to the URL or to the media? Like, send them over to the Better Podcasting page. And that is specifically your fault because you should know better that SP is going to do that.
Are you talking about how Pinecast for some reason likes to rename the MP3 file to something completely random? Is that what you're talking about?
That is exactly what I'm talking about. I did do a real quick test over on my side of things, and I went to download a file. And, you know, granted, I didn't actually download the file because I already have it a few times on my computer. But the name that it automatically gave it was the same name that I uploaded it with. So somehow either my computer was magic or they remember the file name that you gave it. So you don't just have a random string of letters and numbers.
That would be a new development and something we'll have to look into, because it definitely was before when we were doing live chat. Definitely was there. Last I knew when I uploaded Gonna Geek, it was also doing that. And so did you download that from within the panel or just from the public facing page? And if so, on the public facing page, what did you download it from the embed player? How did you do that?
I went and started to download it from that embeddable player. So maybe that was something with it. And again, it could have just been my computer being magic somehow.
Yeah, because, like, you know, just to discuss this while we're on here, I'm on Pinecast right now, and I went to episode 409 of the Gonna Geek Show, which was the last one that I uploaded, and the audio URL field does list it as E69D9F42- and a whole bunch of things .mp3. So this is something we're going to have to revisit, because I wonder if they have changed that, because that would be such a huge win if they did. Now I'm very interested.
Or he's talking about downloading from the embeddable player.
Yeah, which could be as well, but I guess we'll have to find out and come back to that.
Yeah.
Well, oh, you know what? Catch. Interesting. Right now, so we'll walk through this in an unproduced fashion. As I hit the download button on the episode audio behind the scenes button, it does download the actual file name, but the audio URL they want you to use is randomnumber.mp3. So interesting. We might have to reach out to Pinecast to get some further clarification about whether one should be used when you're embedding versus another, if there's something that we should know about between the two. I'm so glad you brought that up. And this is why we like having guests on this show, because they get to call us out on different ways that you can tackle things.
Mm-hmm. And again, this was something that you were wrong about and not me. Just making it clear there.
You're sure it was me? 100% me?
I'm 1,000% it was you. Yeah, it was you. Even though I tried it and it got the different file name. Yeah, it was all you. I went back to the show notes to look. And yes, I did qualify that it was downloading a different file name. So when we did this a few weeks ago, I did download a file and it downloaded as a different name. So that's a few weeks ago. Maybe they changed something behind the scenes after we said something. They're like, I can't believe they're still on this. I'm gonna change this. So maybe. I don't know. We'll have to reach out and see. Chris, I'm gonna move on from that right now and just ask you, are there any other media hosting services that you are interested now in knowing more about? I know you talked about your journey to Pinecast, but is there any others that you're like, hey, I'd be interested to learn more about them?
As cliche as this is, I'm not looking to change, so I'm not really paying too much attention. So I'm really enjoying listening to this series from y'all and, you know, just having it in the back of my mind where I could go. So I'm excited to hear about the other ones that you haven't covered yet. I mean, honestly, like, I've been treated well with Pinecast. I have all my files. So if in that worst case scenario where they're just gone and everything goes poof, I have all my stuff. I can upload it again and be fine. So I don't need to worry about that as much as somebody who uploads the file and deletes it off their computer and never thinks about it again.
All right. So a theoretical question then, building upon that, if Pinecast was to shut down next week, it's not, don't worry about it. We have no indication that Pinecast is shutting down anytime soon. But if it did, who would you default to right now, based probably on what you've already heard on Better Podcasting?
Right this second, I couldn't tell you because I'd have to go back and look. I know I've gotten a little bit spoiled with having the multiple feeds. That is something I know that you liked and I really like too, because I like the idea that I can experiment with having a show and I'm not putting out any extra money in case the show doesn't go anywhere. I also have a show on there that's really just an extra spot to dump my trailers, so that people downloading the trailers doesn't mess with my listen stats. And I like not having to pay for that for anything, but also being able to say, hey, look, here's a player. You can listen to the trailer really easily before you download it.
That's an interesting way to use a second feed. And if you have them unlimited, why not do stuff like that? I can definitely see that. As far as the multiple RSS feeds, I am looking at it from like a TV review aspect. And a lot of the seasons now that are streaming, like on Apple TV Plus, for instance, you only get a few episodes, a handful of episodes, maybe 10, maybe 12. And then you have to move on to the other thing. But for SEO purposes, it's probably better to have the show, which is titled and named specifically for the show that you're reviewing, instead of having like a giant, what did you watch on TV this week? You have a specific podcast in all of its metadata that's dedicated to that specific show. I mean, the Halo series just ended season 2. Masters of the Air just ended on Apple TV Plus. Silo is genning up on Apple TV Plus for its season 2, but season 1 was only 10 episodes. So you're not going to have a lot of episodes on these, but you're going to have to move for SEO purposes again to multiple shows. So I do like that multiple RSS feeds, even if you're not going to get a lot of downloads for them. So I like that. Also, you mentioned something else on your answer to the question before about being excited to hear our reviews of the podcast media hosting services as we go along. And I can honestly say I'm excited to look at each and every one of these as we get to them, because I've wanted to know, you know, is the grass greener on the other side of the tracks, so to speak? And I am learning a lot about the possibilities of what is included with a podcast media host service and what might not be. So I've enjoyed it so far. I'm excited to look at every single one of them. And I'm glad you're excited to hear them too, because I'm learning a lot and I'm glad you are.
And so much changes in the space so fast that even something a few months ago that somebody put out as a review could be completely out of date by the time I get to it.
Were you talking about the possibility of my Pinecast was changing the host or the file names? Is that what you're talking about?
It could be that. It could be, you know, Spotify for podcasters. What are they doing this week? Because, you know, they change stuff up all over the place.
Yeah, we were one of the first to report the fact that you could get multiple RSS feeds under the same account now. You used to have a separate email, but now that they moved over, a lot of other people are reporting it, but we were the first ones that I know to report that fact. So you're absolutely right. Things have changed very quickly in the media hosting service space.
I have an answer, by the way, about the MP3, and I think that we might actually be a little bit incorrect here with what we said. So I did a little bit of digging here. And so the file name that is presented in all the download links are actually a random name that does some behind the scenes redirection to the actual core file. So the core file you get on your computer in the end is named the file that you upload. But when you look at the actual download links from the embeddable player, they actually have a bunch of random numbers and stuff.mp3 and some other stuff actually tacked on there. On the On the embeddable player, download one. There's actually two .mp3s in the URL. And then if you were to take that big long link, the one that's put in your important link section of Pinecast, and you put that in the browser, it's the same thing where eventually you do get served the actual MP3 file. So I think we do stand a little bit corrected here on this, that the actual file itself is retained as .mp3, but the link that is shared out there, that is out for the public, is a random hodgepodge of numbers. So, you know, you were right. We'll say Chris was right. Let's call it
remember,
as that.
Well, okay, that's fine. But I distinctly remember downloading a file and it was not named the same thing. I distinctly remember that. Otherwise, I wouldn't have put it in the show notes like that. So I tend to think it might have changed.
I think they waited for you to do that specifically so they could try to embarrass you.
Yeah, I'd say I'm wrong. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm also going to stand by my point that you should just be sending them to the Better Podcasting website and telling them to hit the play button there.
That's fair. We should be telling people, go over to betterpodcasting.com, check out all of the amazing shows that are there, including the Better Podcasting Chats with SP that has an S on it.
Yeah, and has a lot of guests to it as well. Now, Stephen, there's one final question that we wanted to ask Chris, but this was a special one that you put in the show notes, so I'm going to let you ask him.
Yes, Chris, I would like to know, if you were a duck, what type of podcast would you do?
My favorite duck is Scrooge McDuck, not for the money aspect, but for the adventure aspect and all of the crazy things that they got into. So if I was a duck, I would model myself after Scrooge and I would do a podcast looking at all of the weird places around the world and all of the weird and strange happenings and historicalness and all the archaeology and stuff that you can find out there.
Would you fly with your podcast gear to these different strange places?
I might.
Okay.
I would have to really worry about that, though, because Launchpad is not that good of a lander.
Mm. Also, oftentimes ducks land in the water, so you'd have to make sure that your podcast gear was waterproof.
And would your podcast be clean, or would your language be a little foul? Sorry.
It would be a little foul. We broke SP.
I did break SP. I broke him.
My language would probably be a little foul because it's right there. If nothing else, I'd have my nephew Donald on the show, and you know how he is.
Well, thank you for answering that insane question that was not intended at all to be asked, but then you actually wanted to answer it. So thank you very much. I do greatly appreciate that. And much more serious answer than I would have anticipated. I would have more so expected you to say, what kind of question is that? Shut up, you stupid Canadian. That would have been also an appropriate answer.
Would have been appropriate.
Well, Stephen, you realize, though, you're talking to a guy who asked most of his guests at the end of the show, who's your favorite Muppet?
Which is a much better question than if you were a duck, what type of podcast would you do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much, Chris, for coming on and having that discussion with us. We're now going to move on into our final segment of the day, our Better Pod Back.
This is where we here at Better Podcasting turn the show over to you as we run through some of your feedback. We call this segment Better Pod Back.
We had an excellent question come our way last week from Damien the DM. Now, if you didn't realize this, last week we talked about Buzzsprout. And in that discussion, we talked about how they had a podcast called The Buzzcast, which SP is a huge fan of. I will admit that I have not listened to it, but from what SP has told me, it sounds like it is quite a nice, respectful podcast, which is probably more than can be said about some of the industry podcasts that are out there. But there was a question about Buzzcast, or specifically saying, is it pretty Buzzsprout centric, or is it more industry news and comments with a Buzzsprout lean?
I like the podcast so much that I started calling the service Buzzcast instead of Buzzsprout. So my apologies to Buzzsprout on doing that. I didn't mean to do that. I listened back to last week's episode. And there was like a 2-minute stretch where I was calling Buzzsprout Buzzcast. So my apologies there. The answer to Damien's question here is a great question. It is podcasting centric to the service, but they try to pull the thread and go industry wide and then have maybe a footnote at the end that says how it applies to Buzzsprout. So it's always got a Buzzsprout tinge to it, whether it's subtle marketing or not. It's up for you to decide, but I do like the more benevolent delivery and the nice play and not cutting down anybody else in the space. So, and it's three people versus all the other podcasts that I generally listen to or have listened to in the past anyway, that are podcast media host providers. It's like one or two hosts and they have three. So it's a little bit more interaction back and forth and it makes it a little bit more lively sometimes. And it brings different perspectives there because you get different perspectives of the actual service itself and their podcasting endeavors outside of Buzzcast. There I go. Misnabling it again.
That's a whole different kind of show, SB.
Yeah.
Is that the Canadian edition?
Sure. So Buzzcast, I really enjoy it. If you have listened to it before, we'd like to hear what you think about it. Come to our Discord server at betterpodcasting.com/discord and let us know what you think of a Buzzcast. And Buzzcast, there I did it again, Buzzcast. And let Damien know and answer his question, because I'd like to hear more people that have more opinions of people that have actually listened to the show. And as always, we're up for hearing if you're actually using the service as well. And just like Chris here, what did we get right? What did we get wrong? What is your take on Buzzsprout that we didn't look at? And maybe, just maybe, we'll have you on the show in the future.
So what you're saying is that a podcast, almost ruined my own joke there, podcasts that only have two hosts and talk about podcasting shouldn't be listened to? Is that what you're saying?
That are industry shows. I think industry. I did qualify that. I said industry.
Is that why this show is so much better today? Because we have three hosts here today?
It's any show that has you talking less is actually a better show.
Valid.
Also, it has my pretty eyes for anybody watching the video.
Yeah, that is just so much more than what SP and I usually have to offer to our video viewers each week.
I have a birth defect in my eyes, by the way. I don't think I ever told you this, Stephen.
No. We're learning all sorts of things today here.
Yeah, I have a double row of eyelashes. That's a birth defect.
Well, if you would like to talk about the Buzzcast or SP's eyelashes, like he said, come to our Discord server. Now, our last piece of podback we have is going to be live. It's live Better Podback because this actually came in our Discord. And how could I let the person who wrote it off the hook without actually singing it right here, right now, because he last week came to the Discord and did his best Blink 182 impression. So I'm putting you on the hot seat here, Chris. You got to do it.
So I just want everybody to know that I'm going to skip to the good part. This is all about SP and his Roadcaster. Say it ain't so, shipping so slow. Where is my Roadcaster Pro?
Thank you very much. I'm so glad you did it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And if you would like to contribute to these lyrics or write another song to SP, please email podcast@betterpodcasting.com. Ideally, with a video or an audio clip of it, because I think you've kicked something off here, Waffles. I think there's all sorts of songs that could be written about SP's Roadcaster Pro 2 saga. So please be inspired by Chris.
And when he gets to number 4, there's a lot more things that rhyme with the number.
I think that'll be at least in 6 years. Yeah.
Oh, well, all you got to do is get to the fourth version, right?
No, I meant your personal unit number.
Yeah,
4.
I was going to say, once we get there, there's all sorts.
I don't know. That may be a couple of weeks, but we'll talk about that next week.
Well, thanks to Chris for coming on to the show today. And also thanks to anybody who's watched this live or watched this afterwards or listened to this afterwards, wherever you are checking out this show. Would you please come to our Discord server and tell Chris Waffles what a fantastic job he did? Because, Chris, I do really appreciate you coming on here today.
Well, thank you. You know, it's nice to be able to come in and talk to some respectable people and Steven and get to go and, you know, just talk podcasting with people who don't tell me to shut up because they don't care.
You think that I'm going to fight back to that comment, but that's not going to happen because I agree with it. I can't deny it.
It's there.
And if you would like to check out Waffles on some of his other podcast endeavors, you can check him out on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. He does star on that show there. He stars with his other co-hosts and also SP. Then you have Play Comics, where you can check that out. Both of those are on the Gunna Geek Network, but you might want to check out that fancy embed over on the Play Comics website, which is at what?
It is at the really hard to remember website, playcomics.com.
So that's going to go ahead and wrap it up for episode number 291 of Better Podcasting. I'm Steven saying thank you to everybody for watching and thank you to our guest, Chris, for coming on today.
Everybody make sure to eat more waffles.
See everybody next week as we talk another podcast media host provider. Might have something to do with the color red.
Bye.
Thanks for checking out another episode of Better Podcasting. You can find the full back catalog of Better Podcasting at betterpodcasting.com. If you're into geeky podcasts, please check out the other podcasts on the Gunna Geek Network at gunnageeknetwork.com. This show was produced and edited by Stephen John Drew. Voice work was done by L.W. Salinas. Thanks again for listening or watching. And we hope to see you again next week.